He's our voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Dr. Brown, you and I, we've been through the trenches together. I'd consider you like a friend of mine, right? We're friends.
Absolutely, yeah, sure.
Okay, you know I love you, right?
Sure.
Okay, I feel like today's the day that you're going to get mad at me.
No, not at all.
It's okay. All. I mean, you have every right to. I've watched what obviously doctors have gone through in the pandemic. I've been able to talk to them and to get firsthand, you know, experiences and looks from what you guys have gone through. And I know we have been anxiously waiting for vaccines, especially for the little babies out there.
Right.
I hate it. I hate that it's here. I don't like it because I fall into that category with a 3-year-old. And I've been hoping that Chase would turn 5 before the baby vaccine came out.
Sure.
But it's here. And I got to be honest, I'm in this very weird spot where I know professionally I'm supposed to tell people, like, get vaccinated, because I feel very strongly about adults getting vaccinated. I feel fine with the teenagers and so on and so forth. But when it comes to the kids, the little kids, I it's hard for me to lie when I say I've got questions. I'm nervous about
it. Absolutely.
You know, so we'll get into it. First of all, I noticed that there are two different vaccines. So let's start with just the facts that are out there. We've got two different vaccines for kids 4 and under. You've got the Moderna, the Pfizer. It sounds like the Moderna is a two vaccine or 2-shot system, and the Pfizer is a 3-shot system. What I found interesting about that is there's a huge difference in efficacy. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And again, I think this is a tricky, I think this is actually very tricky in two aspects. The first aspect is it's very tricky because it's very difficult to do studies on the very young, as you know. And I think this has led to delays in even getting a formal recommendation that's actually out. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that this is people's children. These are people's babies. And you know what, if you're going to, you know, ask them to do something, then you're going to need to make sure that your data is very clean and that you have a consistent message of why. And I think we continue to have a little bit of an issue, as you and I have discussed over the years, about sort of communication, like why to do this. Mm. I think that's sort of an issue. So I think that the data on both of these vaccines is good, and we could talk a little bit more about sort of why I think it's good. The data is good on both, and I think going with the 3 versus the 2 really had to do with how you stimulated the immune system to get the enough antibodies to have a response if there's an exposure to COVID-19, and that's simply why there's 3 versus 2, the Pfizer versus the Moderna.
So I would love to know why you think the data is good. I'm gonna be honest with people as well. I'm not into gotcha situations. I'm really not into it. That's just not what I'm about. I like answers. I like facts. And I was sent a video from actually a few of our listeners, and I watched it. And there was a lot of alarming claims. I'll say claims because I don't know what's right, what's true, and what's not. But it came from a woman. Her name is Dr. Claire Craig. And I guess she's with the Heart Group, H-A-R-T, which I'm not too familiar with. But a lot of alarming stuff that she was saying about just the data that was presented to the FDA from Pfizer. And so I shared that video with Dr. Brown. And for people who are not familiar, she brought up a lot of points. And one of the things was she did not feel there was good data. So I'd love to hear why you think
there
was.
Absolutely. So and we have to remember that there is going to be, and listen, I'm not here. This is not a gotcha show. I mean, you're not trying to get me, and we're not trying to discredit anybody's opinion. You know, people can have their opinion, and people and doctors are people too, and they can absolutely have their opinion. The concern is that, you know, once you start putting that opinion out to the public, you know, you need to make sure that your facts are right. And we had the same issue when we first came out with a vaccine for adults. You know, the facts need to be straight, and some of it is actually very complex, Melissa. It's not just, you know, you take two people in a room, you know, you give one the vaccine and the other you don't, and say, okay, good luck, and then you come back, you know, they come back, you know, come back a month later, and you know, one of them got it, one of them didn't, mm-hmm. and that happens to be the person who, you know, didn't get the vaccine. Oh, great, then the vaccine works.
Right.
That's simplistically, you know, what people expect, and that's just not the way it works. So the first thing about the data is you have to remember that the data that is going to be reviewed by the FDA, which is actually very stringent. In fact, most companies that are trying to get a medication out is very, you know, it takes quite a bit of effort and several steps to get the approval, as well as an independent advisory group of highly trained, very intelligent, I'd say scientists that actually review these, and then it goes to the FDA. So it's not even the FDA that sort of approves it. It's actually this group that looks at it first. The data is, you have to remember that the data for pediatrics is also going to go, it's a rider almost. It's going to be in addition to what we've already seen. And you can use the data that you've previously seen to say, okay, these are sort of known facts about the vaccine. There's safety models that have been done in adults and young adults and children. Remember, this is the very young children. All that data has actually already been looked at. It's been in animal models, it's been in human models, and now it's been in millions of people around the world. So there's a lot of data that's actually out there. You can use part of that data to say, okay, this is what it looks like, and that brings up your numbers to take a look at it. Then you sort of look at that class. And the reason why, and I just mentioned this a minute ago, the reason why it took so long to get a response is because, you know, this is two-prong issues with this. The first is that, you know, getting volunteers to get the vaccine, one. Two is that we know that children or younger children are not getting serious infections, nor are they dying from COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that, and I think that was thank you again for letting me look at the video. I mean, we knew that, and I'm not going to disagree with her that that's actually true. And having an emergency use authorization is actually for serious injury or death. So, one, the data looks, I mean, taking those into account, and then looking at sort of all the pieces that are there. Now, if you take thousands of kids and they've actually gotten it, but have actually got the vaccine versus not get the vaccine, they might weed out because they may actually not have an exposure, or they may not catch it. So you can't use that data. You have to only use the data that is consistent with what's there.
Interesting. So when she says in that video, and again, I'm referring to a video that was sent to me by actually a few of you, Dr. Claire Craig, she exposed the clinical trial data that Pfizer put forward. She said only 2/3 of the children actually, dropped out of that trial. So they originally had over 4,500 children recruited, but 3,000 of them, quote unquote, dropped out. So what you're saying, Dr. Mount, is it may not have been as simple as just 3,000 children walked away from it, but maybe
exactly.
Their data wasn't good enough. Like it wasn't substantial.
Exactly. They didn't meet. So every time we develop a study, I say we as the scientific community, we have inclusion and exclusion criteria.
Okay.
So what includes you in the study and what excludes you from the study?
Interesting.
And you know, if you don't meet those, and one of them is that you don't get infection or get an exposure, then you know, that might be an exclusion criteria.
Got it.
So that's where you end up having a significant, so you can have thousands of people, especially in a case like this, thousands of people who will be potentially excluded from this. And not that they say, I don't want to do it anymore, I had side effects, because people assume, you know, they don't do it anymore because they're like, oh, we got the vaccine and now they had side effects, or they didn't.
I thought it sounded a little bizarre, that idea of like, well, then why'd you sign up to begin with? No, I kind of thought the same thing. We're talking about COVID vaccines for kids 4 and under with our Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health. So, Dr. Brown, let's really quick get back to what you were just saying. So 4,500 kids were recruited for this Pfizer vaccine trial. 3,000 of them dropped out, and a lot of the reasons could be mostly because the data just wasn't going to be sufficient for what they were looking for. So with that being said, I'm not great at math, but 1,500 kids, do you think that's enough to make a determination if a vaccine is safe enough?
I do.
You do? Wow.
I do. 1,500. And again, remember, this is 1,500 on top of the millions of people who've actually already got the vaccine.
Well, so you're talking millions of people or millions of children, babies?
Well, we're talking millions of people.
Right.
And then we know that those above the cutoff have also been getting the vaccine. Then we have data that's after and related to that, too. So, you know, there is definitely, I mean, you can't assume that, you know, this class of or age group is going to be that much different than older children.
Okay. What about the details about the increased chances of getting COVID after just one shot? I think this doctor had said there was a 30% increase in chances that a child in the trial got COVID after getting just the first shot.
Right. So statistically, you can do anything and you can make numbers look sort of any way. But I like to say, does that make sense?
I don't know. That's why I ask you. I have no idea. I'm no mathematician. I just talk for a living.
Well, you think about it. Exactly. We think about it. I mean, and I think you have to always look at things from a logical standpoint. You know, and you ask yourself questions. Why would this age group be more susceptible if they get the vaccine? Well, it doesn't actually make any physiologic sense. It just doesn't make sense.
So then why were kids getting it?
It actually has to do with the math in which they were looking at it. And remember, and we've talked a little bit about it, it has anything to do from, you know, and we know the vaccine doesn't prevent anybody from getting the infection. They can still get the infection. So you have to look at confounding factors. So factors in which put children at an increased risk. So were they in clusters where there was more? Were they in a population where there was a higher amount? Is it a time frame in which there was a higher amount? And you need to take that raw data and need to break it up, and you need to make sure that it's analyzed. And there's much smarter mathematicians than I that actually look at that data and say, okay, you know what, that doesn't really make sense. So if you think about it, if I'm a hermit, right, and have no interactions with people, the likelihood that I'm going to get COVID-19 is zero because I have no interaction with anyone else. But if I'm in, you know, if I'm in a city or if I'm in, you know, or a close-knit group, there is a higher likelihood that I'm going to end up getting it. If the study began in when we had a lull maybe 3 months ago, let's say we had an uptick in February, let's say it was March because March was relatively okay, you know, that the data came in March. You have to look at that variable also. We knew that in January and February it was much higher. We knew in the last month it was last higher. So if you look at the straight data and you look at straight out at that numbers, you can derive anything if you're not taking out those confounding variables, those variables that make it there. It's complex math that I'm very aware of, and I'm very aware of how these go through the analytic process to make sure that you standardize that approach. So taking a number and saying, well, these are the amount of kids that actually got it, and comparing it to those who didn't at the same time, you know, just pulling that data out randomly is not useful.
I wish I had so much more time to talk to you, Dr. Brown, because what it sounds like is that we're missing a lot of factors in this review, essentially. There's a lot that's missing in this review from this doctor. And what I always find really interesting, and I and maybe it's been this way in the medical field, I find it interesting when you have doctors who speak out against something so strongly. And I felt like she asked a lot of questions that I too had questions about it, like why isn't data made public for us to see so we can make it an educated a decision on what's right for our kids? You know, when you hear about emergency use authorization, you know, it's like you said, it's for people who are at high risk of dying. We're in this horrible situation in the beginning of the pandemic, emergency use authorization, but we know babies aren't contracting it.
I think that's a, you know, and again, I know we're running out of time. So one is that doctors can have opinions,
right?
You know, and there's a lot of different doctors that are out there. And I can tell you why. That's what I deal with every day. All of our docs have different opinions. Mm-hmm. Physicians are geared for the individual. The majority of physicians are dealt, your physician is actually dealt with the individual, their patients, their group of patients. Not all physicians are like, are thinking about sort of the entirety. And that's, and so when their mindset kind of gets focused, they're focused more. Remember, they're more focused on sort of that patient in front of them.
So they see
it a little bit different than those who are sort of in the scientific community. And again, there are physician scientists. I'm not saying that they're all there, but the majority of physicians are sort of physicians that actually deal with everyday, day-to-day clinicians who have to focus on sort of the patient in front of them or their group of patients, not about the entirety and the different areas and the different regions and the different times and the different social inequities and all those other pieces that you have to deal with when you're dealing with the entirety. Again, one would hope that the experts that are on this FDA advisory panel and the FDA, that's what they're looking at. So I think that's really important. And the second thing is that the, and I know you made this point, and I know a couple, 2 seconds, is that I think it's important to realize that, yes, right now, children and babies are not, you know, are not succumbing to COVID infections. However, remember how we started with this? You know, we were only seeing the elderly who were actually getting very sick and having bad outcomes. And slowly over the period of 2 years, we've seen it get younger and younger and younger. So if there's a transition in which this this organism goes from, you know, an adult and young adult and maybe even kid disease to a pediatric disease, it could potentially be devastating. I think people just need to keep that in mind.
Mm. Well, you've definitely made me, you know, think about it differently. I don't know if I'm still there, Dr. Brown, but
it's
I'm
okay.
But you're helping me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's your baby. I get it.
I know. I don't know. And the other thing, too, My other really quick thing, though, Dr. Brown, because I know a lot of kids who do contract COVID, my other question was, like, so Trace has had COVID twice, and I know some other people have said that their kids have had COVID. Does that suffice to hold off on getting the vaccine?
You know, time will tell. It's really tough to say. I would say that it is better that they've actually been infected than not. So those who have not been infected and not been vaccinated are going to be at a way higher risk of having potential complications, especially if this organism mutates.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Brown, I so appreciate you. I thank you so much. And I'm sure we'll continue diving into this because I know it's a topic that we all want to discuss. And I appreciate you bringing calmness and serenity to a very complicated situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think people just need to, you know, and again, this is right now, this is something that people just need to. And again, I think this is not about sort of me expressing my opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is my opinion, but I mean, it's not me trying to convince people that they should get the vaccine. You know, I think we've have enough to say we should get it. I think this is about getting people the information and hearing both sides of the story and not sort of going crazy on someone who can actually put on a video and then turn get a whole bunch of hits for it.
Right. No, that's I agree with you. I do agree with you about that too as well. Dr. Brown, thank you so much for all you do, and we'll check in again really soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
Dr. Brown with Griffin Health here on WICC.